So you go, Parshas Chayisara starts the following. It says, Vayu Chayisara, Me'ashana Vesrushana Veshava, Shanu Shnei Chayisara. Okay, the years of Sarah were 100 years, 20 years, 7 years, the years of Chayisara. Those are the years of her life. Okay, there's a lot of stuff on that. I mean, this is, like, everybody talks about it was 37 years, Gematria, Vayu is a palindrome, meaning it could be read either way. Her life could be, you know, when she was 3, she was the same thing at 127, she was all equal to one another, and 37 is the years of her life, because you're not considered living until you have a child. She had a child at 90, she died at 127. A lot of different things that are going on in this pasuk, and why you have to separate each one of them. What does it mean? She was as beautiful at 20 as she was at 7. A 7-year-old is not beautiful, and if you think she is, you're in a lot of trouble. I mean, it's just like a lot of things that are very off about this, about that. But I'm not gonna. 37 years altogether. That's all she lived with a child. So in the main base of Rav Schwab says something crazy. I don't know if anybody's read Sefer Yev, but in the beginning of Sefer Yev, the Satan has a weird conversation with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. He says, nobody's like Avram Avinu. This is the Satan talking. Nobody's like Avram Avinu. Don't even think that there will ever be a person like Avram Avinu in this world. Nobody's like him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what about Yev? Have you seen my boy Yev? You know, have you seen this guy Job? He's a great guy. He's unbelievable. He's done great things in this world. And the Satan goes ahead and says, he's never had any tests. He's never done anything. Let's go test him. And they test him, and Eve fails the test, and he has 3 friends. One of them is Eliphaz, and lots of questions who Eve was and everything. What was the raya that the Sultan understood that there was greatness to Avram Avinu? How did he know? So Rashi says in Eve that the reason why he knew was because of Kvura Sarah, that when he owned the land, he was supposed to have Eretz Yisrael, he was promised the land of Eretz Canaan. When he wanted to bury Sarah, he wasn't given a burial place. He had to buy the burial place from Ephron. So the Sultan said, wow, such a great Milo. There's no one like Avram Avinu in the entire world. It's not even one of the Nisyonos. The last test, according to all Shitas, no matter how many Shitas there are about what the tests are, the Rambam, the Rash, the Rav, Rashi, all the different opinions of what the 10 tests are, none of them include Kvura Sarah. None of them include Kvura Sarah. So as for Schwab, I don't understand. How did Kvura Sarah not make it up there? If it was so great, such a great test that the Satan was convinced that Avram was the greatest person who have ever lived, then what in the world is it not a Nisayon for? Why was the Akedah the last one? What happened over here that it's not a Nisayon? So here we go. I said this before, but it's such a passionate thing. The fact that I don't turn on a light or turn off a light on Shabbos, the fact that I don't even have a Yetzer Hara to do it, I still get a mitzvah for that. But what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is I'm on a different level. I'm not on the level of somebody who might turn on a light on Shabbos, you know, when they pass by a light switch. I'm not going to. That brings me to a higher level than that person. A higher level. That means I'm beyond that bechira. I'm beyond that freedom of choice. I don't have that freedom of choice. I can't, even if I wanted to, I don't think I could turn off a light on Shabbos. Turn on a light on Shabbos, unless it was a heter for it because it's refuah or whatever. I just don't think I can. I'm just not. I don't have the ability to. If I woke up one morning and I said, you know what, I'm not going to put on tefillin today, I'm still going to put it on. I'm not going to be able to stop myself from doing it. I'm beyond that level of maybe I should put it on, maybe I shouldn't put it on. Thank God, it took me a while, but I think that level is a lower level. There are people that are on the level who I don't know if I should put it on, if I shouldn't put it on. I'm not on that level anymore. It's a different level completely. It's a different madriga. That suffix doesn't apply to me. Something with Avraham Avinu. After the 10 Yisodos were up, the 10 tests were up, this whole thing with Sarim Avinu was pushing to him. It wasn't a test. It was like he was so into cold Ovid Rachman on the top of it that everything that God does is for the best. This wasn't a test. I'm trying to find a burial place for Sarah. I can't find one. Okay, no, so I'll have to go buy one off somebody. It wasn't like, why did God do this to me? That didn't even enter his mind. It didn't go there. He was so far up after the 10 tests were up, he had no Yetzirah anymore. He had no Satan that was with him. And he was so far above there, he couldn't even think of a problem. If you would have gone up to him, can you believe that God didn't give you a burial place? He would have looked at you and said, what are you talking about? What's the problem? Everything that God does is for the best. Don't worry about it. Well, he wouldn't even understand the Shiloh. That's the level that he was on. Said the Satan, no one is on that level. No one got beyond that level. The only way to get to that level is to test yourself. Says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, Eiyuv is on that level. Says the Satan, he hasn't been tested yet. If he passes tests, then he'll be able to be on that level, and then he'll be able to be that type of a person. But until then, he's not there. He's just simply put not there. And that's why this isn't a Nisayon. It was just a new level that he was on that other people weren't on. That's the difference between him and everybody else. Okay, that's that. Now, we have to understand, such a tzaddik who's on that level, it's a little bit beyond this when it comes to this. They don't have just stam davenings, just a tefillah. When they daven, they affect the whole world. they especially affect the people around them. That's why you're always supposed to daven with a tzaddik or near a tzaddik. You go near him and you daven near him, because his tefillah will cause a hashpah on you. I don't know if anybody's tried it. I've davened near Gedolim before. I sat next to Rav Chaim Knievsky. That was by accident, because I had no idea where he sits, and he sits in the middle of the shul. So I happened to sit right next to him without realizing it. That was a bad move on my part, but in the end, it was an awesome move, because I got to daven right next to Rav Chaim Knievsky. Got to daven right next to him. I've davened near Rav Sheva. I've davened near Rav Nelson Svi Finkel. I've davened near Rav Scheinberg. I've davened near quite a few people. And I've done it on purpose, because I feel different. There's like a hashpa of, once you're standing next to him, you feel a little bit different. You feel a little bit better when you daven near him. Not only that, the hashpa of a real tzaddik applies on the whole world. He can affect everyone in the world, and even people he's never met before in his life. His hashpa can affect them and make them do tremendous things. Now here we go. He told Eliezer, I don't want you to take a wife from Yitzchak, from the Benos Kanan. Says Rav Schwab, I don't understand, why not? There probably were a couple tzaddikus that lived among the Kananim. There were probably a good number of people. Eliezer's daughter, who Eliezer said, I want to marry my daughter off to Yitzchak, was probably a big tzaddikus. Probably a tremendous person. There probably wasn't anything wrong with her. So what's wrong with those people that he was choosing? So look at the wording that Avram does. The Avram Zakin, he says, Lo sikach isha livni mibnos Kanan. Don't take a woman for my son from the daughters of Kanani. Asher anochi yoshev bekirbo. That I live among them. Says Avraham Avinu. You know why they're so good? Because I live with them. And when they're nearby, my direct hashpa affects them. If I die, or if I move away, they'll immediately go off the derech. I know what these people are like. They're not be'atzmusam within them. They don't have it within their nature to be good. They're only good because I'm affecting them. And when I leave, it's all gone. Haraya, when Avraham left, all his gerim, totally off. Completely gone, as we spoke about before. The Nefesh Rasu Bukharan, all gone. What's Pshat? How could they do that? Because it wasn't that smoothsome. They themselves didn't make that Kedusha. They got the Kedusha by being near Avraham Avinu. When they saw Avraham Avinu, they said, wow, we want to be like him. But when Avraham Avinu left, they said, we can't do it anymore. We can't do it. It's the effect that you have. It's like, it's a small effect. It's not enough. And Avraham Avinu knew that. And he said, don't take away from over there, because even though they look good, they're not good. They're not good enough. That's not for my son Yitzchak. I need something better. It's the whole story of Ramosha de Leon. Ramosha de Leon lived in Tzfas about 450 years ago. Who, when he would walk around, people used to do tshuva. They'd hear Huri tshuva when they passed near him. Every time they went within Dalad Amos something, they just felt they have to do tshuva. There's nobody like that nowadays who really has that. And I went to Rav Pinto this week. He's close. But it's not there. It's not. It's you got to have somebody you, like, you look at, and you immediately feel like, oh, wow. Now I feel like I got to do tshuva. I feel like I did something terrible. There's just nobody that has that presence, that ability to make you feel that way. That's what he meant by Asher Nochi Yoshe Bekirbo. It's just different from everybody else. Now, Rav Levi Yitzchak Mberditchev takes it further. It's Rav Schwab's idea. Rav Levi Yitzchak Mberditchev was obviously before Rav Schwab. Takes it further. Now you can understand the test that Eliezer did. Isn't it weird what Eliezer does? He goes down there. He goes down to this place and he says, I'm standing by this spring. The Benos Anshir are going to come out here, right? The girl that says to me, here, take some of my water, that woman is going to be the person for Yitzchak. What in the world kind of a test is this? You were told by Avraham Avinu, take a girl from my family. What would you think the first thing that Eliezer does? What would he do? First thing we do is go to the family, go around and say, like, hey, do you know where Lavan is? Do you know where Bethuel's family is? Anybody from the family of Nahor? And go check them out and then ask the Kasha. But you're standing on the outside of the city by a well. Any random woman could come. The Gemara in Tanis even blames Eliezer and said it was the wrong thing to do. It was usher for him to do this. It was nichush. You're not allowed to do this. Anybody could have came. And he said, whoever comes by and offers me this water, I'm going to let that person become Yitzchak's wife. What's he doing? What in the world is he doing? What was the point of him doing such a thing? Aside from that, Avraham was told at the end of last week's parsha that Rivka was going to be born. What does it mean that Rivka was going to be born and Rivka's here and now all of a sudden Avraham decides he's got to marry off his daughter to Rivka, his son to Rivka? What's going on over here? The pshat is like this. Rivka was born through the hashpa of Avraham. His chesed permeated the whole world, especially his own family. His own family that was there in Haran. The family that was there with Nahor and everybody else. His chesed went throughout the world and it hit down by Haran and caused Nahor to have a grandchild through Bethuel, a granddaughter that was going to be so full of chesed, you wouldn't recognize it. You won't recognize it. It was just going to be an unbelievable amount of chesed. How did that happen? Because of Avram Avinu gave her a little bit of his neshama. Every time he davened, like a little spark from his soul just went straight into the people that he was davening for, even if he didn't know who he was davening for. It just happened and went inside. So there was a spark of the soul of Avram Avinu within one of the daughters of Bisuel that was out there in the middle of Haran. So he immediately told Eliezer to go to Haran because he knew that she was going to be around. He knew that there was some girl around there that had it. He wasn't positive that she was directly from his family. He knew that she was living in Haran. That's all he knew, though. It was like a map quest where you were around the same area, but you're not positive exactly where. You know the basic idea? And he was going to go to that area, and he knew it had to be someone, but it was someone who would act like Avram Avinu. Not necessarily look like, nor be from the family of Avram Avinu. When Avram Avinu said, go to my family, he said, go to me. Find me. Find me in Haran. Among all those Rishayim, there's one girl there that's going to stand out in her chesed. It's going to be not be like anybody else out there. When you find that girl, that's the girl that I want. But it doesn't have to be from Nahor's family. It happened to be he was from Nahor's family. But it doesn't have to be the way. Go find it, and that's how you'll be able to figure it out. That's why Eliezer went straight to the Mayan, to the spring. Why the spring? Because the spring's full of water. And water stands for chesed. And immediately asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. He didn't know who to go to. He didn't know if he should literally go to the family of Nahor or find any girls, a true balas chesed. He said, now I'm going to need that nichush. That's why the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Tezvav, it says, Vayiyu Terem Kiyu Ladaber, after he finished speaking, then he Rivka Yotes Asher Yulda Livsuel. Yulda means was born to, as if on her own. It was just born to Bisuel. Yolda is the word with a komat, not with a shuruk. What's with the shuruk? The pshat is, she wasn't literally born from Bisuel. Bisuel had nothing to do with her. It was literally from Avram Avinu. Physically, Bisuel caused her to come into the world. But it was Avram Avinu's child. The whole neshama was Avram Avinu's child over here. That's the idea. And that's why, what did he do when he saw that she did the chesed? What did he do immediately? Anybody remember? The first thing?
Kissed her.
Not that, kissed her. No. That was Yaakov Avinu with Rachel. Given the nose, he gave the bracelets, the rings, the whatever he had with him, the Bekel Agugolas and everything else that he had, he ended up giving over to Rivka immediately. And then what did he say to her? What family are you from? Because he knew the woman that he was looking for did not have to be from Nahor. It could be from anybody, as long as she was a huge balas chesed. Because that would prove she's really from Avram Avinu. She had the ashpa of Avram Avinu. And then afterward, he would say to her, so what family are you from? And when it turned out it was from Bisuel, he's like, wow, this worked out really well. This is even better. It's much better than I thought. It's unbelievable. Everything came out to be exactly what I wanted to do. That's the pshad. It's just a crazy little thing over here. So that's the Tefer Shlomo. Chav Dalid Nun Tes. You ready for this over here? Nun Tes is following. By Yishalchu is Rivka Achosam. They sent out Rivka, their sister. That's Meinikta. And her nursemaid. Anybody remember the name of Rivka's nursemaid? Comes up later on? Devorah. Very, very good. Devorah comes up. What does that mean, her nursemaid? That's Eved Avram, that's Anashim, and everybody else. What does that mean, her nursemaid? So listen to this shot. The Tefer Shlomo, the Damsker says the following. Because again, the shefa of an Adam Tameh, if you get money from an Adam that's Tameh, if you get money from him, it causes you to have a little bit of tumah inside you. It causes you to make a little bit bad decisions. You should know, the Brisk Rav, and Brisk was very machbid, never to take any money from someone who's Machal Shabbos. Didn't make a difference. The guy could offer him millions of dollars. The Brisk Rav would refuse to take it. Rav Avraham Yeshua would refuse to take it. So you know, it's Stam. Rav Avraham Yeshua's yeshiva, and Rav David's as well, in Eretz Yisrael, neither one of them takes money from the government, from the Israeli government. The only two yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael did not take money from them. Because they hold that money that comes that's tainted from Mechalel Shabbosos, from people that are Mechalel Shabbos, is not worth having. It's not worth having that money. That money gives them nothing. Gives them nothing good inside this world. So they won't take it. So Avram Avinu knew that. And refused to allow that money go into his house. And when he saw that Rivka was born, gave them all the shefa they needed in Rivka's house. He brought over all the shefa they needed. Instead of the shefa being from Lavan and from Bisuel, he gave them all the shefa that they could get, threw it down for them, so that they became rich from Avram Avinu. That was the yonak, the nursing, that Rivka had. It was the food and the money that Avram Avinu Ki'ilu gave them by throwing it over to them and allowing them to be. As soon as Rivka left, there was no need for Avram Avinu to give them any more hashpa or any more shefa. So what did Avram Avinu do? He took away Rivka. He took away the Meinikta as well. He took away all the shefa that he gave them. So that's what happened when Yaakov comes by later on. They're poor. Lavan had no money. The only reason why Lavan and Bisuel were so great and so unbelievably big in that city, why Bisuel was supposed to be the prince, was because the Shefa came from Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu's Shefa gave them everything they needed. When Rivka left, they didn't have it anymore. So Avram Avinu took it all down and the Shefa was all gone, yeah?
How did Avram make his money?
Avram Avinu didn't need, he got automatic shefa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Automatic, whatever bracha and hatzlacha he needed was automatically there. It was just like, he didn't have to work anything. It was a guy who just like, when he one day he woke up and he's like, you know what, I think I'll buy a lottery ticket. And wins $3 million off the lottery ticket. That's just what it is. The shefa was automatic to Avram Avinu so that he didn't have to worry about anything. Just bracha was automatically there. That's the idea of how big he was. Now, can you imagine? I want to get a picture. I want you to be Eliezer Eved Avram. I want you to be Eliezer Eved Avram for a second. Eliezer Eved Avram is growing up in Avram Avinu's house, growing up on all the most kadosh things in the world, the holiest things you can ever imagine, more than anything else. Can you imagine what it's like for him to go into Lavan's house, into Bisuel's house, and to have to face that tumah? He was so affected by it, Yishmael was, says the Ma'aril. Now look what happens. In Pasuk Chav Vav, the Pasuk says, the man bowed, this refers to Eliezer, and he bowed down to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He bent his knees and he bowed down to Hashem. That was by Rivka. Because speaking of Rivka was speaking to a Tahor person. But Bisuel's house was full of Tuma. So at the end of the day, when he talked to Bisuel and Lavan at the end, Vayishtachu Artsa LaHashem, he bowed down to the ground. Says the Ma'aril, he got pulled down by Gashmias. And Eliezer was nailed by that Gashmias. He's used to Kedusha. He's used to unbelievable things in this world. When he went to Lavan and Bisuel's house, used to all the Shefa and all the good stuff that had Avram Avinu's house. All of a sudden he went over there to Lavan. He was destroyed. He was brought down to the level of Tuma, where he bowed down, he still bowed down to Hashem, but he was bowed down with Gashmias. That's why nobody else was sent. Eliezer of Avram was the only guy who could go. What, you're going to waste the Rosh Yeshiva's time? Eliezer of Avram was the Rosh Yeshiva of Avram's Yeshiva. You're going to waste his time? You're going to tell him, you go and find a shliach, you go find a wife for Yitzchak? Nobody else could have taken that. Anybody else who would have gone would have been brought down by Bisuel and Lavan and never would have came back. They never would have gone. They never would have came back to Avram Avinu. They would have said, we're done. Eliezer was the only person to go and get affected, but still be willing to come back to Avram Avinu. He was by Yishtachu Artzol Hashem, but he didn't go totally down. Now, bring that down. What was Eliezer worried about when he's sitting down at the table and he said, I won't eat until I speak my words? Anybody remember what Rashi says? Rashi says he's worried about something. What was he worried about? Not going to sit down, I'm not going to eat anything until I say over what I need to say.
The poison.
He's worried about the poison. Says it to Tiferet Shlomo the Radomsker, the poison, Sama Maves. You know what he's worried about? Eating food from a tame person is metame you. It can be metamte malev. It can destroy you. He won't be able to think straight anymore. He'll be able to say, he'll start going into their ways. And he didn't know that it was Shefa from Avram Avinu. He thought that it was Shefa from the Rishayim. He wouldn't need a thing until what? Until he spoke Divrei Torah. Eved Avram Anochi. You got to hear what I have to say in Sichas Avde Avos. The talk of the Avodim of the Avos is greater than Divrei Torah. He spoke at Divrei Torah. What did Divrei Torah do to the table? It's like he made a bracha. He brought it up to the level where he's able to eat it. There wasn't literally poison, said the Radomsker. There wasn't poison on the table. It was poison to him. It was poison to Eliezer Eved Avram. And then what killed him? Such bracha in the food, such Divrei Torah in the food. When Bisuel ate his food, he died from it. He couldn't take that amount of Kedusha. That's the pshat. It's that the Sama Mavis was, if he would eat the food that was so poisonous, that was so bad, it was so down low, if he would go ahead and make himself tahor, then everything would be that Bisuel wasn't able to take it, Eliezer and Avram was able to take it. It's just crazy. Throughout the whole thing, it all has to do with Shefa. Now we go through, now you can understand the whole parsha. Rabbi Shmuel Brazil had a little sheet that was brought out last year. I think somebody typed up a shiur that he gave last year in Shar Yashiv. And the sheet was around here last year. I found it. He said an unbelievable thing. Unbelievable thing. It really connects to all this. The beginning of the parsha talks to B'nai Ches. He's talking to B'nai Ches. Anybody know how many times B'nai Ches is mentioned in the Torah? The people of Ches? 10 times. that unbelievable? 10 times. 10 times it's mentioned. He talks to B'nai Chais. He bows down to B'nai Chais twice. Bows down to them twice. What in the world is going on here? What is with the B'nai Chais? What does he want out of B'nai Chais? And he convinces Ephron to sell him the cave. Ephron was a ra'ayin. Literally, a guy who was stingy, who didn't want to give anything to anybody else, to any tzaddik. He hated tzaddikim, hated everything. And he gave up a cave to this tzaddik Avraham. Granted, he paid a lot of money for it, according to Reb Gershon Scheinberg, not related to Reb Scheinberg. Gershon Scheinberg, I found it in something in Eretz Yisrael. He says he did the whole thing. It was worth $384,000. That's how much he bought the cave for. $384,000. That's what I had down in this sheet. That's a lot. He paid that much money for the... But I'm sorry? He figured it out silver, taking the 400 shekel... It says 400 shekel kesef over the socher. No. So you can figure it out. If you figure out how much a shekel is, you figure out the weight of silver, and then you multiply by the amount an ounce of silver is, you very easily be able to figure it out. So in other words, if a shekel is, let's say, half a pound of silver, so you can very easily figure out 400 half pounds. That's 200 pounds of silver. It's very easy to figure out on the market today how much it would cost. That's how much it was. It was that amount. I don't know what he said. He only said 384, but it's easy to figure out if you know those types of cheshbonos. No, it wouldn't be so much. But I guess you have to say with inflation, that was a little bit different. But Rishmol Brazil says like this. He says, number one, why did he talk so much to B'nai Chais? What did he get out of talking to B'nai Chais so much? Number two, why go through with everything with Eliezer? And then repeat it again. Go through and Eliezer had to repeat every word over to Besuel and Lavan. Number three, Besuel and Lavan were convinced. You know what they said? May Hashem yatsa hadavar. Wow, this is from God. What did Eliezer say that was so convincing? They said, wow, this is from God. Was there anything there that was like, well, I had davened to God, and all of a sudden the girl appeared. I could say that to somebody nowadays, and the guy would be like, alright, crazy coincidence. But Lavan and Besuel were sitting like, whoa, jeez, that's God. Let's go. And then all of a sudden, at the very end, what do they do? They're like, hey, wait, no, you're not taking Rivka. They go against it. They want to keep Rivka there. What in the world's going on here? What's happening? Okay, so here we go. Slonim Rebbe says that the gift that Avraminu had, the gift that he had, was Tov Ayin. Ayin Tov. That means your right eye. Looking at things and seeing the greatest thing out of everybody there. To see somebody miss davening and be like, oy vey, I should have woken him up for Shacharis. Not what a loser that he didn't wake up for Shacharis, but think, oy vey, he must have been up so late doing something that had to do with Chesed. To think that way. Avinu was the king of Dan Lachavskos, the king of understanding what everything was and how to do the right things and to be Malamed Skos and everybody. He saw the Tov in every Russia. And when you do that, when you're Dan Lachav Schos, says Rabbi Shmuel Brazil, you affect the neshama of that other person. And that other person starts thinking better about himself. Your Dan Lachav Schos causes that other neshama to bring himself up a little bit. To make himself say, yeah, you know what? I did have a good reason why. He responds favorably. So even the most selfish people, when they meet up with a Tov Ayin, with a guy who looks at them and is Dan Lachav Schos, they'll say like, oh wow, we'll actually give in to you. There was no way the B'nai Chais were ever going to give land to Avraham Avinu. They didn't want to do it. There was no way that Ephron would have even thought about giving anything to Avraham Avinu. But his Tov Ayin caused that to go down a little bit. Ephron stood for the Ra Ayin. And when Tov Ayin goes up against the Ra Ayin, he's able to affect him to make the sale, but it cost him a lot of money. But that Tov Ayin was so effective, he made B'nai Chais so holy, he was able to bow down to them. He's able to bow down to them and say that. Eliezer and Avraham knew that from Avraham Avinu. He learned how to be Tov Ayin from Avraham Avinu. And thus, when he spoke to Eliezer and Besuel, to Besuel and Lavan, he went up to them and Eliezer said to them, you do want to give Rivka to us. You love giving Rivka to us. And he's able to be that guy. He hypnotized them. He did a Tov Ayin in which they said, yeah. That's right, we do want to go out again. May Hashem yatsa adover. It was so effective that it felt like it was straight out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But later on, after they ate and they had some of the food, they started saying to themselves, wait a second. And now this doesn't go with the board that we had above that was full of Kedusha. They had something gashmias. They started saying to themselves, wait a second. Do we really want this? Do we really need this? What's going on here? Started saying to themselves, this is not what we're here for. That's the difference between them. What did Yitzchok see in Rivka Yimenu? Yitzchak saw in Rivka Yimenu. Eliezer saw in Rivka Yimenu that she was also Tovayim. I want you to think about this for a second. Eliezer Eved Avram was a very strong man. A very strong man. Chazal say, according to one opinion, he was Og. Og. Eliezer Avram is sitting by the well. He's got no issues, no problems whatsoever. He's standing there with 10 camels and a bunch of slaves. And he's sitting there. And he's saying, hey, can you get me some water? To a little girl, to a 3-year-old girl. Can you get me some water? Now, if I'm that girl, I said, what the heck's wrong with you? Why don't you get it yourself? You're a big, strong man. I'm a 3-year-old girl. What's wrong with you? You have all these avodim here. Why are they here if they're not serving you? I don't understand. Like, well, what's wrong with you? Is it a Pella? It's a Pella. He's sitting right by the well. He's sitting around there. He's waiting. And he's just like, I just don't feel like leaning over and taking out a bucket. You know, a little girl, if you're willing to do it, I'm willing to take it. Like, it's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. So what's going on here? Rivka had that tovayin. She looked at Eliezer and said, there must be a good reason why he's not taking any water. It must be that he thinks it's stealing from the city if he takes the water as a guest. And that must be, that's why I have to do it for him. So she immediately went up to him and said, can I get you some water? I'm sorry that you couldn't take on your own. I'm sorry you didn't want to take, but you're allowed to take. Can I get you some instead? When he saw that she had that tovayin living among Rishayim, she was able to see the good things in other people. She was able to see that unbelievable good. He looked at her and said, you must be Avraham Avinu. I got this from Avraham Avinu. You must be like Avraham Avinu. He saw that there had to be that Hashpa from Avraham Avinu. And that's a shot. It was so good. It was so good that there were two things they said by Eliezer. They said, Kach Balech. Take him and go. Take him and go. Take her and go. The exact same lashon that was used by the Akedah. They came to the same lashon that was used by the Akedah. Anybody look at the bracha that they give Rivka Yemenu? The bracha that they give her at the very, very end? I want you to look at this. Last week's parsha. What is Avraham Avinu's bracha afterward? It says like this. It says, here we go. I will bless you. I'll make your children like the stars in the sky and the sand on the banks of the sea. And they're going to defeat your enemies. What do they say to Rivka right before Rivka leaves? Anybody see this? Absolutely unbelievable. You will be very, very many. Your children will drive out the enemies of your gates. It's almost the exact same bracha. The exact same bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avraham Avinu at the Akedah. It was the same bracha that Lavan and Bisuel were able to give Rivka when she was leaving. That's unbelievable. How did they come up with the exact same thing? It's a Pella. The same bracha that went to Avram and Yitzchak went to Rivka from her family filled with Tuma. It's because that Ayin Tov was Mashpia on them. And it affected them so much they were able to come up with this type of a thing. Okay. Last thing. At the end of the Parsha, Avram Avinu does something very strange. He marries Keturah. Some say his Hagar. You should know, by the way, there's a Medrash Rabbah that Avram Avinu had three wives and two concubines. Sarah, Hagar, and Keturah were all Ishas, wives, and there were Pilakshim, two concubines. Now we don't know that. Chazal seemed to say it was just Sarah and Hagar was Keturah. And that's it. It was just them two and there was nobody else. That's what it seems to say from what Chazal seems to say. That's what it seems to be. However, over here it seems to be that he married Keturah. He had six children. And then he sent them away. What did he give them when he sent them away? He sent them away and it says, Vayitin Avram is Kol Asher Lo Liyitzchak. He gave everything he had to Yitzchak. Well, Bnei HaPilakshim Ashel Avram, Nosan Avram, Matanos. He gave them gifts. What were these gifts? So Rashi says, anybody remember what those gifts were? Anybody want to say them? Pirshu Raboseinu, Shem Tuma, Masr Lahem. He gave them the names of Tuma. the names that you can say in order to be mashpiyar the shadim, to get demons to do whatever you want to do. The names that you can say to use magic, giving the abilities to do magic. Now, first of all, how does Rashi know that? Because Matanos is written without a vav. Says the Igra Dekala, anytime a word is written without a vav or a yud or a hey, one of the letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, that automatically means there's tuma in the pasuk. There's tuma there. So when it says Matanos without a vav, it refers to bad Matanos. What is that bad Matanos? The bad Matana is the Shema Tuma. That's what it is. The Chizkuni, the Dasikanim, and the Rabbeinu Ephraim says Matanos is the Gematria of 890. Same Gematria as Lumdum Lahashbia Lashadim. He taught them how to swear to Shadim and make the Shadim do whatever you want. That's what he ended up saying. Now, why would he do this? And how did he know them? So Lamaisa, he got them from Mitzrayim. Anybody remember what he says? He goes over to Sarah and he says, say you're my sister. So what'll happen? The Yitnu Li Matanos. They'll give me gifts. What's the gifts? The gifts were the Shemos Atumah. That's why he went down to Mitzrayim in the first place. He needed to know the Shema Tumas. He didn't know any of them. And he did it lilameh, not in order to use them, but lilameh, to know Torah. Avninu's of Gemara Avodah Zarah, you know how many prakim it had? 400. You know how much ours has? 5. I'm missing 395 prakim of Avodah Zarah. That's got to be awesome prakim. But he went down to Mitzrayim in order to learn up the Masechta of Avodah Zarah, 400 prakim. He got down all the tumah you could possibly imagine. Okay, fine. So that's where he got him from. That was the Matanos over there, that became the Matanos over here. But why? Why would he need to teach them over to his kids? That here's where it gets crazy. Okay. Yaakov Ruveni says, simply put, he gave everything he had to Yitzchak. What did he give the Yerusha to all the other children? He gave them the ability to have whatever they want. You can ask the Shadim for whatever you want. You want riches? Shadim will give it to you. You want kavod? Shadim will give it to you. You want power? Shadim will give it to you. He gave them the ability to ask the Shadim for whatever they wanted. That's what he did. So he gave it to them, said they won't complain about anything. Gonim in the Ein Yaakov says a little bit differently. He says he taught them how to stay away from Tuma. He taught them the Shemos of Tuma, so that you stay away from them and only believe in God. And he says, the Chiddush Gonim says, that's why Arabs, the Chinese, I guess you can say, have always stayed away from pure Avodah Zarah. The Arabs being from Yishmal, and the Chinese are supposed to be the B'nai Pilagshim that went to the East. They don't believe in pure Avodah Zarah. I'm not going to get into Buddhism and everything like that. The problem is also that India was also supposed to be from the children of Avram Avinu, and Indians for sure, as we know, the Indians for sure worship Avodah Zarah. Even nowadays, there's about 1 billion people worshiping Avodah Zarah. So what does that mean exactly? Okay, whatever. That's what the Yalkut Gershuni says. Yeah, it could very well be. It is true, though, that Arabs never have done Avodah Zarah. Whether or not, you know, Muslims are considered Islam is considered Avodah Zarah, or Buddhism is considered Avodah Zarah. Okay, I'm not getting into that. Right, it seems that it's not. But what I said to do, Kijay, you should know, by the way, I had a Rebbe, Rav Elia Levin, who was my Rebbe in Midrashim. He was he's the Rosh Yeshiva of Shari Tuna in Eretz Yisrael. He showed me a diak in the Rambam that even Islam is considered Avodah Zarah. Even though it seems that the Rambam was saying that Islam and Christianity is not, there's diukim that he was only doing it for the censor, and he read it a totally different way. I can't remember it offhand. I have it in my notes, but he read it a totally different way, another way of looking at the Rambam. So either way, that's beyond the point, but I got to tell you this one. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says that there's a mess up in Rashi. It does not mean Shemos Tuma. It's Shemos Bituma. There are certain names of God that a person can say even when they're in Chutz Laretz. You should know, when a person is Tameh, Tumas Meis, or outside of Eretz Yisrael, there are Shemos, there are God's names that you are not allowed to say. Part of it is Yud Hei Vav Hei. If you say that full name of Yud Kei Vav Kei, when you say that out, that's a big problem. It's a big problem because we're Tameh, and we don't have the ability to say it in Chutz Laretz. Even in Eretz Yisrael, we don't have the ability to say it because we're still Tameh Meis. The 72 letter shame, the 45 letter shame, the 53, the 63, the 72, all those names, all the shamos, the 42 letter shame, you can't say them while being tummit. How do you get out of that tumah? Will you be able to say them? That's a different story. But there are certain shamos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're allowed to say even when you're tummit. For example, the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Shalom. One of the names of God is Shalom. You're allowed to say it. Not only are you allowed to say it, we say to people, Shalom Aleichem. We say that to people. Even though we're Tamei, even though we're outside Eretz Yisrael, even though we're in a land of Tuma, you're still allowed to say certain Shemos. Even these Shemos have power. A lot of power. Tremendous amounts of power. And if you say them in the right way, they can do unbelievable things upon a person. Unbelievable. Just saying Shalom Aleichem, you think it's just Stam. Oh, hi, how you doing? Shalom Aleichem is putting Shalom upon that person, the bracha of Shalom, and putting the Shechina upon that person, if you're doing it correctly. What he taught them was how to use the Shemos Bituma. That even when you're a land of Tuma, because they were never meant to be in Eretz Yisrael, and even when they were going to be Tamei, because they were never meant to be outside of that, and even when you don't have the Torah, you'll have the ability to use these Shemos and be very spiritual and know who God is. Know exactly who God is. And they use that. And you should know, I've heard this from a person who learned all about, apparently there's two different ways to learn acupuncture. There's one quick way, and a lot of the people that do acupuncture go to this 1 year crash course, but the real way of doing it is a 7 year course. 7 years altogether to do acupuncture, literally for 7 years. You go to classes for 7 years long. It's literally like becoming a doctor. Said there are only 10 places in the world that do it. 9 are in China. 1 is in
New York.
Chicago.
Jerusalem. It's in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv in Israel. This guy was a secular Jew. He went to Tel Aviv and he learned how to do acupuncture as he was becoming more religious. As he became more religious and he became, this is what he told me, he said as he became more from, he found a piece. He had this huge book for acupuncture. He was going to show it to me and then I didn't have enough time to stay. It's a book like that thick, he told me. Like this thick. All about acupuncture and everything. He said there's a whole chapter in there. This is the Chinese medicine, the Chinese book of acupuncture. A whole chapter in there is entirely from the Tikkuni HaZohar. It's a quote from the whole Tikkuni HaZohar is inside there. He said he found it and he showed it over to his rabbi, and his rabbi said all the chachma of the world comes from Avraham Avinu, and all of them got it from Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu taught them how to use it in their different ways. And even the art of acupuncture is based on parts of the Tikkuni HaZohar where it goes through and it tells you what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. And that's what Avraham Avinu showed them. It's that you can find God and be makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the most unlikely places, even without the Torah. That's what Avraham Avinu did. And the reason why he did it was to be mefarsim alakuso ba'olam, to be mefarsim God's name in the world. He knew that Nefesh HaRasul B'chana wasn't going to survive. They weren't going to make it. But he did know that other people were going to, and that was going to be his children. His children were born in order to be mefarsim God throughout the world. And he did that. He had 6 children in order to bring them about in China, in India, in Japan, in Mongolia, all those areas, Tibet, in order to make those things work. In order to make them work. It's an unbelievable thing. I heard once that the Tibetan monks can trace themselves back to Avraham Avinu. I heard that once. I don't know if that's true, but I'm not sure. So, you know, it's out of nowhere. We'll stop with that.